and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
So this operation for invitation is really to wipe out this group. Is really very significant.
The Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF, says it seeks to defeat and dismantle the rebel group Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF.
People are supposed to decide what can be done to their bodies, especially when it comes to health-related matters.
The Matatu Owners Association says it will defy a Kenyan government directive not to transport unvaccinated people in their vehicles.
Because the panel was properly constituted and the Supreme Court has already ruled on this subject matter.
And a Nigerian political pressure group says Lagos State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu does not have the constitutional authority to reject the findings of a judicial panel inquiry. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Citizens of the Gambia vote in a presidential election to choose a new leader of the West African country Saturday. Polls opened at 8 a.m. and closes at 5 p.m. local time, according to the Independent Electoral Commission, or IEC. It is the first presidential election in 27 years that does not have exiled former strongman Yahya Jammeh's name on the ballot. Pap Makan Khan, communications director of the electoral body, says there have been no reports of violence. He says security officers are present at the polling centers to ensure a smooth and peaceful election process. Six presidential candidates are on the ballot, including incumbent President Adama Barrow, who is seeking a second term. This, despite promising during his first campaign not to seek re-election. Analysts say Mr. Barrow faces a stiff competition from attorney Usainu Dabo, a former vice president who also served as foreign minister in the current administration until June 2018. For the latest development, I reach Pap Makan Khan, communications director at the Independent Electoral Commission.
So far, from the various regions we talked to, the polling is going very well. It started on time in most of the polling stations. And for now, I would say no incidents have been reported. Although the only complaint that was forwarded by one of the political parties alleged that some of the voters who came to the polling station without a face mask were turned away. However, we verified with the regions in Banjul, which is the capital city of the Gambia, and also in Kalifing municipality, which is also one of the biggest regions in the Gambia. But however, the polling officials confirmed to us that no, that didn't happen. Some people, in fact, were allowed to vote without a face mask. Polling is going smoothly. People are queuing to cast their votes.
How are the security agencies in working with the Electoral Commission to ensure voting goes on peacefully?
There was enough security arrangements put in place to make sure that the voting process will be conducted peacefully and also smoothly and orderly, in an orderly fashion. Of course, we are seeing this today as people have turned up in large numbers at many polling stations to cast their votes. So far, so good. It's going quite peacefully and it's going very well indeed.
Pat, you know that in the past, people have complained about the credibility and transparency of the election. People are worried that if this is raised again because they expect it to be competitive, people could raise it again. What assurances are you giving the prospective voters and the entire Gambia people about the credibility of this Saturday's election?
I have to clarify that the IEC have ever conducted very transparent elections. And this one in 2021 is no different. And just to assure the Gambian public that the Commission is committed to ensuring that free, fair, and very credible and transparent elections is conducted. And again, making sure that political parties are present at all the polling stations, so that the issue of transparency can be addressed. Because once the political party agents present, then they can witness the process and then they can report to their various political parties or candidates on whatever they see at the polling station.
Once polls close this evening at 5 p.m. local time across the Gambia, when will the election results be declared and when will the winner be announced?
Once polling closes at 5 p.m., and immediately after that, the counting process will start. That is, counting will be done on the spot at the polling station. And once the counting has been completed, then the process of tabulation, vote tabulation, would commence as soon as possible. And then just to say that once the counting process and tabulation process is completed, the results would be declared. And so this would be done as quickly as possible. Usually in the Gambia, results are declared within 2 days. So hopefully, if everything goes well, the results will be declared as soon as possible.
If a party decides to challenge the outcome of the election, what recourse do they have?
Yes, any aggrieved political party or candidate has the recourse to the law. He may seek redress from the courts. Of course, he can file a court petition at the Supreme Court if he is not satisfied with the process.
So, what is the message of the Electoral Commission of the Gambia to the people as they elect a new leader in an election today?
Yeah, the message you would pass to the general public and to the Gambian electorate is that we really urge them to come out in their numbers to exercise their democratic right, their right to vote. And in doing so, let them do it in a very organized fashion, calm fashion, and also within a peaceful environment. And again, let them wait for the commission to do the tabulation, and then we will declare the results as expected. However, we also urge them that the process is very transparent and that the commission, rest assured, would deliver the results as dictated by the government electorate. And once this is done, definitely we'll come out to them and declare the results. And again, once this is done, let them be peaceful. The winner, let him jubilate in a responsible manner. Of course, the losers, fine. We urge them to accept the results as the will of the Gambian people.
Pa Makan Khan is the communications director at the Independent Electoral Commission of the Gambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. The Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF, says its core objective is to defeat and dismantle the rebel group Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF. This after the administration in Kinshasa announced a joint military offensive against the militants. UPDF spokesperson Brigadier General Flavia Biakwaso says a combined force drawn from Uganda's infantry, motorized brigade, artillery, armored and special forces command moved into the Democratic Republic of Congo and launched an offensive against the ADF. Military analysts say the joint military operation appears to have been launched after the ADF claimed responsibility for the recent twin bombings in Uganda. Meanwhile, the UN mission in the DRC says it welcomes regional cooperation to combat threats. UPDF spokesperson Brigadier General Flavia Biakwaso tells me that the joint offensive is in response to multinational threats posed by the ADF.
This operation is really very significant to both of the countries, especially the eastern DRC. You know that for a long time, this part has been infested with a lot of armed gangs, rebel groups, and of recent terror cells of ADF. Therefore, this operation, for which detention is really to wipe out this group, is really very significant to the people of Congo. For the first time, we think, and we have believed, and we believe that really that this operation where UPDF is going to see the end of the existence of ADF. So now that we have the mandate of and the permission of the DRC government to join them and have this problem sorted, I know that for the first time, these people, I mean for a long time, these people are going to enjoy the lives the way other people do.
What does this joint military operation contain? Is it only by air? Is it operation on the ground?
It's a combined operation of all arms. Remember, we started with air and artillery, and now the ground forces are moving in. Because, we are saying, the end state is to make sure that this part of Congo is fully, I would say, fully liberated from the hands of the terrorists, from the hands of armed groups. Therefore, now the air strikes are definitely are there and will still continue to be there, but also the ground troops have moved in to take positions with the intention of course, combing the areas where they have already struck, but also to look for the other hideouts, perhaps where the air strikes cannot go.
In the past, residents in parts of Congo have kicked against the UN military presence in Congo. Don't you think that with this combination of the joint military operation could also face a similar fate with people getting tired of military operations in that part of Congo?
No, on the contrary, not. People are very happy. People are very supportive. This is what they've been waiting for. They've been let down by the UN presence in that region. A lot of massacres have happened under the eyes, under the nose of the monarch. People have been butchered. Girls have been raped. Properties have been looted. Under the presence, the full presence of monarch forces or UN forces. That is why the people were tired. Because with all the resources, what are people seeing? They're only seeing, and they are choosing them of actually only seeing their resources getting taken away. But they're increasingly seeing increased and intensified activities of ADF, intensified activities of armed gangs. That is why people are saying no to UN, but they know that with UPDF entering there and joining hands with the Kinshasa government, it's all going to be well. I can assure you, from what we are getting on ground, from the population, they're saying for at long last now, they have a ray of hope. They know that life is going to return to normalcy.
There's a suggestion that the Allied Democratic Forces, or the ADF, claimed that it carried out suicide bombings in Uganda's capital, Kampala, last month, could have necessitated this joint military action by the UPDF and the Congolese army. But if I may ask, what is the end game here?
You've said that the bombings in Kampala could have precipitated this. Yes, this could be a catalyst. This is our philosophy, that you cannot have stability in our country where else there's no stability, and you say that it's over. You know, they came and carried out the twin bombs. But now it's time for us, because now we have the permission. And this permission we have been looking for quite some time. So it's now time for us to take the war or the battle to them, wherever they are. And this is our wish. And what we know we are going to gain from this is, first of all, our president believes in all the peoples of Africa being free from insecurity. The end game is to finish terror activities within the country, but also in our neighborhood.
Brigadier General Flavia Biakwaso is the spokesperson for the Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF. She spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Kenya, the Matatu Owners Association says it will defy a government directive not to transport unvaccinated people in their vehicles beginning December 21. The group argues that the no vaccination, no service order is misplaced and overly ambitious, adding that it will also deprive them of much needed income. But government spokesperson Cyrus Oguna rejected the group's stance, saying the administration has enough vaccines for citizens. Health experts say the government's directive appears to be aimed at compelling citizens to get vaccinated to limit the spread of the coronavirus. The president of the Matatu Owners Association, Simon Kimutai, expressed concern about the order, saying more than 70% of all public service vehicle operators are unvaccinated but are being asked to enforce the government's new policy. He tells me that the authorities need to review the directive, especially since Kenyans have started traveling to various parts of the country for holiday festivities.
The statement was very unfortunate, and he has got to carry out a research to be able to get information that we've only had now close to 7 million, while we have close to 50 million Kenyans. And imagine vaccinating 7 million only, and you say you would want to deny services to or their rights to travel. It's an impossibility, and you don't give directives on personal businesses, because public transport in Kenya is 100% owned by a private sector. So it can be making decisions on our businesses. We tell him, let the government own public transport, then they can deny them. For us, it would be denying ourselves revenue. And when he gives such a directive, we can't support it at all.
Are you saying that the Matatu Owners Association will defy this directive?
I'm telling you, we will defy, and we will give rights to our customers who give us revenue in lieu of the service we've provided. So we ain't going to take it to enforce that directive at all. We will carry passages as usual, as opposed to denying us revenue. And besides, we'll not have any movement, because majority of Kenyans, a very big percentage, over 40 million people, have not been vaccinated. And I would say 99% of Kenyans rely on public transport, matatu, to travel from one destination to the other.
So is there a way that your group will work with the government to come up with the best solution forward? Because it appears the directive is meant to stop or curtail or limit the spread of the coronavirus, especially with the new Omicron variant on the rise.
You know, one is that government have not put in place mechanism to counter propaganda on what they say, that the vaccine is harmful. The government did not put in place mechanism to challenge the same. We have told the government we will allow our vehicles to have posters and flyers for passengers to read and understand and educate them and tell them the vaccine is not harmful to their health. We will do that. We will even, we've told them to bring vaccination services right to the bus terminals, where we'll encourage our passengers to be vaccinated. You can't tell us, we as Matatu people, to enforce the same while we have not even been vaccinated, all of us. So we told them first, vaccinate the Matatu crew, then we will be able to help you on educating people of you know, the importance of getting vaccinated. So we have given them a chance that we will do that.
Government spokesperson Cyrus Oguna dismissed claims that the directive of no vaccination, no services is overly ambitious, saying the government has enough vaccines in the country. How do you reconcile this two, and what's the next step forward? How do you resolve this stalemate?
You know, the big problem is when a government decides to do things their own way. We need them to listen to the people. They have to take the vaccines to the people. How many people, Kenyans now, they are struggling. They are actually aching to put food on their tables. And nobody who is a casual laborer will abandon what they do to go and queue in Kenyatta, an area which it will cost him to get there. So, and they will not queue because they will waste so much time. And yet the government has the machinery to bring services to the people. We've told them to bring them to the Tammany, all the Tammanys, and we will be able to assist them to teach our people the importance of the vaccine.
Simon Kimutai is the president of the Matatu Owners Association in Kenya. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. A political pressure group concerned Nigerians for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law Initiative says Lagos State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu does not have the constitutional authority to reject the findings of an inquiry of a legitimately constituted judicial panel. The panel said 9 people were killed at the Lekki toll gate on October 20, 2020 during the NSAS protest. Citing inconsistencies and lack of proof, the Lagos state government rejected the findings contained in the panel's report. Local media reported that 11 of the 32 of its recommendations were accepted, while one was not, and 6 require review before approval. Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concerned Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law Initiative. He says Lagos State Governor Mr. Sanwo-Olu and Information Minister Lai Mohammed appear to be playing politics with the findings of the report. He tells me that those responsible for the deaths of unarmed citizens during the NSAS protest should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law to serve as a deterrent.
Our reaction is very simple, that the Lagos State Government does not have the locus to make such rejection of the panel, because the panel was properly constituted and the Supreme Court has already ruled on this subject matter in 2011, that once a panel has been duly constituted by a government, especially a state government, and is a panel of inquiry, that no any other person can invalidate the panel. Whenever any issue arises as a result of the report of the panel, that whoever has an issue with the panel's report can only approach a high court for redress. So the governor, having constituted the panel by himself, and the panel was constituted by Lagos State, having constituted that panel, the governor does not have the locus, does not have the power. What he has done is not known to law under any law in Nigeria. And as such, what he has just done is a political exercise and is of no effect.
Deji, is your group calling on Nigerians or perhaps residents in Lagos to take this matter to court?
Yes, we are urging residents of Lagos and interested parties that are victims of the families who are residents in Lagos. You know, they should approach the Lagos High Court for enforcement of the report of the panel of inquiry that was duly set up by the Lagos State Governor. The Lagos State Governor does not have locus, does not have any locus in law to invalidate the report of the panel of inquiry.
But Deji, in rejecting the findings of the panel, the Lagos State Government said it just repeated allegations with no evidence to prove the circumstances or explain the circumstances of the alleged death or deaths that occurred during the NSAS protest at the Lekki toll gate.
This is not true. The panel took witnesses. Evidence was adduced before the panel. Victims testified, medical doctors testified, the police subjected themselves to the jurisdiction of the panel. There is no evidence that can debunk the report of the panel. So it is fallacy for the government to just wake up by executive fiat and proclaim after eating amala that the report of the panel is untrue.
But Deji, why is there controversy over the number of people who were killed during the and such protest at the Lekki toll gate? Because obviously the federal government, through Information Minister Lai Mohammed, also rejected the findings of the report.
There is no controversy whatsoever. Names of the people who were killed is in the report. Names of those injured were in the report. So where is the controversy here? And this is what we have been witnessing in the country time and time again. Even Nonasu El-Rufai, who many of us have criticized in the past, he did not deny the Zaria massacre. So you can see that people like Mr. Sanwo-Olu, they are the pillars of this country, and that is why Nigerians generally must always interrogate characters like him so that they do not go anywhere close to leadership or power in this country.
So where do things go from here about this? The federal government is saying that there was no massacre, through Information Minister Lai Mohammed. Now you have the Lagos State Government, through Governor Sanwo-Olu, rejecting the outcome, saying there are inconsistencies in the report. Where do things go from here?
We are appealing to the federal government, the state government, to prosecute the perpetrators and bring them to book. We all witness how policemen, the military, abandoned their duty posts nationwide. That no government can be greater than the people. That the sovereignty that was discussed in Section 14 of our Constitution is derived from the people. That real power rests with the people. All over Africa and all over the world, we have seen government abandon their duty posts and completely fled the country because of totalitarian regimes and because of the inability to respond to citizens' EMAs and cries for justice. the greatest way to put an end to things like this is for government to be seen to be doing what is right. People cannot come to the toll gates. General Taiwo was at the Lagos Parliament. He testified on how soldiers were deployed from the 81D to the toll gates and how those soldiers were the ones that carried out the attacks. And we are here discussing whether they happened or not, something that the whole world watched. So give justice to the state, justice to the victim, so that people can say that, oh, the country works, so that those who have reasons to doubt and believe in the country can have a rethink. For us, we believe that this is the only appeal. We can appeal to the federal government and the state government that they should bring perpetrators book, you know, so that we can put this behind us.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law Initiative. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Resident Doctors Association of Zambia says it's calling on the government to expedite the employment of additional unemployed physicians to help vaccinate the public against the coronavirus. The group's president, Dr. Brian Sampa, also says members of the organization are ready to work with the administration, adding that establishing nationwide vaccination centers is the best step forward. He called on the government to consult with other stakeholders to ensure the smooth implementation of its health measures. This after the group says it sharply opposes any enforced vaccination mandate. The announcement comes after a recent press conference where the Minister of Health, Sylvia Masebo, outlined measures to limit the spread of the disease. They require that citizens show proof of vaccination to access government buildings. However, days later, the health minister clarified her statement, saying the measures do not include a vaccine mandate. Dr. Brian Sampa tells me that the Resident Doctors Association does not support a mandate because it violates the Constitution. Dr. Brian Sampa is the president of the Resident Doctors Association of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
We are objecting to that because as the resident doctors, we respect people's autonomy, meaning that people are supposed to decide what can be done to their body, especially when it comes to health-related matters. The only thing we can do as health practitioners is to explain to the people the pros and cons of taking this vaccine and then let the people, with their informed conscience, make informed decisions. It's not our job to force the people because we'll be infringing on their rights. Even our constitution is very clear. The Bill of Rights is very clear that people cannot be forced to be treated the way they don't want. Even if it is just a belief, we need to respect it. If the belief is what is going to make someone refuse to accept that form of treatment, that person has to be respected.
So does that mean that your group could seek legal redress if the government pursues this mandatory vaccine policy?
Actually, after we showed our displeasure and objected to this, the minister went ahead and had another press conference where she said it is not mandatory. But in saying it's not mandatory, they still maintain that people were supposed to produce some form of identification to show that they got vaccinated. But the good part of it is that those were now just politics, because we've seen that from the time we made our point clear, they haven't enforced it, and people have been allowed to make their own decisions, whether to be vaccinated or not, which is very good. We are not saying vaccination is bad. We are pro-vaccination. However, even as we do so, we want people to exercise their right to choose. Remember, these vaccines, and not only vaccines, any drug has got side effects. So in an event where somebody reacts or there is anything that happens to them, who are they going to blame if we force them?
Is your group working with the government to try to address some of your concerns in terms of the best way forward in order to encourage people to take these vaccines? Because it's part of the effort to reduce the spread of the coronavirus and its variants, including recently the Omicron, from spreading among the population.
So what we've done is that we've already offered the government that we've got more than 300 doctors who are not yet employed, and those doctors are ready to go flat out the entire country to work with the government and vaccinate as many people as possible. The main reason why most of the people haven't been getting vaccinated is because of the inconvenience of going to queue up to get a vaccine. Remember that in the past, you've not had enough vaccines. That's why people had to go and queue up. Sometimes people don't know where to get this vaccine. So what we've done is we've asked the government to come up with mobile vaccination program where our doctors will be all over the country following people door to door and also going to the market and all the places where we can find multitudes of people. This is the only way we are going to cover more people. Most of the Zambians want to be vaccinated. They know the importance of getting vaccinated, but we haven't had enough vaccines. Currently, we've got only 3 million doses against more than 10 million people who are eligible to be vaccinated. So even if we go flat out, these vaccines will be done as soon as possible. Therefore, we would even call on the donors and other well-wishers to come up with ways in which they can support our country by donating the vaccines. As an association, we have enough human resources to help the government to achieve 100% vaccination, if possible.
The opposition Botswana Patriotic Front says it is unacceptable and a violation of the constitution for state institutions to be used to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration. Lawrence Okeditse, publicity secretary of the opposition group, calls the arrest of party members before the elections a provocation. His remarks come after the Directorate of Intelligence and Security Services arrested 3 members of the party. Party officials say its detained members are being held incommunicado and not allowed to have access to legal assistance. But supporters of the ruling party rejected the criticism as a publicity stunt, in their words, to score cheap political points. They also called on the opposition to desist from playing politics with legitimate intelligence work. The government accuses the opposition of threatening national security. Lawrence Okeditse, publicity secretary of the Botswana Patriotic Front, tells me that it is unacceptable for its supporters to be arrested.
We have had a number of our activists arrested by the security services. And what we realize or what we know is that these are politically motivated or related arrests. But we do have some by-elections that are coming up. And we have noticed that whenever you have an election coming up, there is systematic harassment of political opponents. So these people are basically being held for their political beliefs. The one thing they have in common and the one thing that they have done that would be said to be, wrong in the eyes of the regime is basically belonging to an opposing political party and opposing the current government.
But Loris, why did you refer to the arrest as provocation?
They keep trying to provoke some sort of reaction from us, because if you look into what President Masisi started doing at first, he tried to render our political party into some sort of illegitimate organization that is rogue. You know, there's a time when he referred to our organization as a rebel movement, as a militia, and, words such as those, basically to try to securitize the BPF and make it some sort of security threat. And this says to us that this is part of his reckless agenda to try to provoke some sort of violent reaction from us, but he's not going to be getting it. All we're going to be doing is continuing to act and, plan as a legitimate political entity, and we're going to continue with this. But then we see a lot of this provocation, and, we're just observing it.
Supporters of the ruling party have dismissed your suggestion and saying you are crying foul because you performed poorly in the recent general elections, and that because you want to raise the profile of your party, you are using a legitimate investigation by the security agencies to cry foul. How do you respond to that?
It cannot be anything like that, because you would remember that these actions from these people have actually been going on for a bit of some time now. It is not a new thing that has just happened. We've had it going on. And, if you look into what exactly has been happening, you get to realize then that this has been happening over a certain period of time. And then when something happens repeatedly like that, it cannot be some sort of ploy to win elections or anything like that, because we don't need this drama to win elections. Our party was formed 3 months before election, and the party has got four parliamentary candidates, or rather, four parliamentarians winning out of 57. And we don't think it's a poor showing. So there's nothing like it is our party trying to mask anything by using this. So,
Maloris, supporters of the ruling party are saying that you are a small party, and the government has the right to investigate individuals suspected of committing a crime. Doesn't the government have that right to investigate anybody alleged to have committed crime, to either clear them or prosecute them if they find evidence?
In every democracy, in every country, the government is charged with the provision of national security. That is legitimate, and it is the duty of government to do so. Now, there is a difference between investigating crimes and actually being in a position where you fabricate crimes and criminal activity against citizens. If you look into it, and there's also a difference between that and systematic harassment. And I say systematic harassment because this is not the first time this happened. Every other, couple of months or so, an activist of ours is taken in, and then they're just basically held. One, they're held without having been read their rights. They're held without being allowed to be in a position to see a lawyer. And, you'd also find that a lot of times these people are held and then they're released without a charge. No one has ever been convicted of anything, but this is maybe like the sixth or seventh occurrence where our activist is just held, just like that, because they can. So this can then not be said to be a government that is investigating crime or anything of the sort. It's basically just blatant harassment of political opponents.
Lawrence Okidite is publicity secretary of the opposition Botswana Patriotic Front. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. The National Union of Namibian Workers says talks with the government to increase salaries for workers are at a stalemate. Job Munieru, the secretary general of the association, says a workers' committee has been tasked with coming up with measures to help with the negotiations. He says the group did not ask for salary increases for the last 3 years to allow the government breathing room. But critics say this is not the time to ask for pay raises, especially since the administration is grappling with the economic impact of the coronavirus. They are calling on workers to allow the economy to recover so the government can meet their demands. Job Munieru tells me that the workers will only embark on an indefinite industrial strike action as a last resort if the talks fail.
It's just an ordinary salary negotiation system, of which they have now reached a deadlock. So there will be a committee to look into this. Then the committee will now report to the negotiation team in order to resolve this issue of salary increment for the workers. So we are still at the very beginning stage. We are not at the danger zone. We are still at an area where we can still negotiate an amicable solution.
But some people are suggesting that demanding salary increment during this pandemic is unfortunate because the government is grappling with the economic impact or effect of this coronavirus, as well as trying to provide vaccines to protect the people as well as stop the spread of the disease. So this is not the right time to ask for salary increment. How do you respond to that?
Actually, it does not want to speak about things that are condemning the rights of workers. The workers has a right to salary increment, has a right to negotiate. They have a legal recognition agreement with government. Secondly, the pandemic destroyed the economy of the country, also destroyed the livelihood of workers. This has become so expensive, and government is not in a position to rescue the situation. The food is up, petrol prices are up almost more than four or five times now since the pandemic started. Children must go to school, they use buses and taxis. So everything has become very expensive. So the economy has not just touched the government. And equally, there is no even rescue from side of the government saying they have reduced the tax payment of work or tax payment of the Namibian people to stop paying half a tax or something to relieve them in order to be considered for that. So We have been considerate for more than 3 years because for the past 3 years, we have organized ourselves as local leadership, have then said we are not going to demand any salary increment for the past 3 years. There's been no salary increment, so that we can allow the government to have a breathing space to SSP at least.
This time around, what percentage increase are workers asking for?
We have something on the table, so that is negotiable. So we don't want to come up with a percentage because we are still in a negotiating process. So the percentage would come out after we have deliberated on what is on the table, and then see what's going to be to happen. We are going to negotiate in very good faith in the interest of Namibians, in the interest of our government. The government belongs to all of us.
Job, talking about the talks not reaching a critical point yet, what do you mean by that? Because I understand some of the public workers are saying if the deadlock continues, then you should embark on an indefinite strike action.
That is not yet an option that we have in our mind, because in our mind we have a positive mind. We are still positive and we still know we need to go around the table, negotiate and come with an amicable solution. Unless that will be the last resort. So the government, the workers, unions, trade unions have not even yet gone to the Labour Commissioner to get a certificate of resolved dispute. So it tells you that we are still on the path to negotiate.
What's the next step forward for you if you are not thinking negatively, as you said, to embark on an indefinite strike action, which you said will be the last resort?
We have no bad intention. We have good intention. We are waiting for the negotiation to complete their task and come up with an answer before we can go for a plan, because you can't have plan for all the if there is no negativity involved.
Job Muniero is the Secretary General of the National Union of Namibian Workers. He spoke with me from the capital, Windhoek. Coronavirus cases have risen dramatically in South Africa since the discovery of the Omicron variant. Government and other entities are scrambling to vaccinate more people to avoid severe cases. For VOA, Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Vaccines can't guarantee you won't be infected by the coronavirus, but they can save your life. That was the message South Africa's health minister delivered today as the country enters its fourth wave. More than 11,000 people tested positive on Thursday alone, a massive spike from the roughly 330 daily cases being detected 2 weeks ago. Health Minister Joe Pala says now is not the time to be hesitant toward vaccines.
No one amongst our scientists had ever said to us that the vaccines will prevent us from being infected with the virus, but that what they've always said and which we are seeing as these waves are getting into operation, that 80 to 90% when you are vaccinated, you'll get mild illness.
While vaccines are widely available, less than half the adult population has been inoculated. The Omicron variant that was discovered by South African scientists last month is driving the new wave of infections. What is clear is that vaccinated people are making up just 2% of hospitalizations. Dr. Michelle Groom is with South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
There's definitely early evidence that this virus or this variant is more transmissible, and also early evidence that there is some degree of immune escape. Vaccination will prevent against the severe disease, but you may still get infections even though you've been vaccinated.
The severity of the Omicron variant is not yet fully clear, with scientists saying more data is still needed. What is different from previous waves is a higher number of children under the age of 5 are being hospitalized. However, Groom says it's too early to be certain of the risks and severity for children.
But I think we do just need to highlight the importance of surge preparation, preparedness to also include pediatric beds and staff.
Vaccines are not yet available to children under the age of 12 in South Africa. Approval for such use is not likely to come until the new year, officials said. In the meantime, nonprofits and community groups remain focused on the most vulnerable adults. Sophie Hobbs is a spokesperson for NACOSA, an organization that supports people living with HIV and tuberculosis.
Given that that the estimation is that we have 8.5 million people in South Africa living with HIV, I think that, yes, that message needs to come across very strongly, that people living with HIV must, A, make sure they're taking their medication because that can protect them, and B, that they should get vaccinated.
Nkosa also works with young adults, women experiencing abuse, sex workers, and drug users. Hop says while misinformation is playing a role in stopping them from getting vaccinated, there are more complicated reasons.
If you don't have a job and you don't have food and you're living in an unsafe environment, you know, really the risk of COVID is really the last thing on your mind. It's a socioeconomic issue.
Health officials are bracing for a surge in patients as seen in previous waves of the pandemic. They say hospitals are being equipped with beds and steady oxygen supplies in preparation. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Baba Adebayo. Edikenzo Africa, hey, Mama Africa.
Yeah. They call me bad.
I woke up with a fear this morning, but I can taste you on the tip of my tongue.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor William Eagle and producer Tracy Carter, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the offspring of an elephant will not be a dwarf. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.